against Howard. Mr. Jones.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Bill Jones from Madison, Wisconsin. I represented Mr. Howard in the case below, as well as the appeal that's before you today. The first issue I brought in the appeal has to do with the Court's finding that Officer O'Keefe did not know that Darius Howard had already been frisked for weapons. And I appreciate that it's a clear error level of analysis. However, reading the testimony of the officers, I think it's more than just a head scratcher, it's just a head shaker. I can't seem to come up with any reasonable application of that testimony to conclude that that was a truthful presentation before the Court about what happened. Officer Wise asserted that he doesn't remember if he told this officer who approached him that he had already searched him, despite him describing the scene as being just a couple feet away from Officer O'Keefe. Officer O'Keefe says, no, I never asked him, but that just simply, I would ask the Court to review that testimony and assess if there's any real rational conclusion that the Court made when it said, I believe that O'Keefe was unaware that this person had already been frisked for weapons and was considered safe as far as
weapons. Well, you know that we have to give the district court quite a bit of deference in terms of that finding, and the Court talked about, you know, it was a rapidly evolving situation over 3 or 4 minutes. There were two officers. They were outnumbered. They didn't have enough handcuffs. One person had already fled the scene.
Well, I can appreciate the characterization of a rapidly developing situation, but I guess I just don't see it that way, and particularly when O'Keefe came over to the two men laying on their
stomach. The question is not whether you see it that way, counsel. The question is whether the district judge was clearly erroneous in seeing it that way.
And I believe he was. And the reason I say that is it wasn't escalating at that point. There were two men laying on their stomachs. One was already, the guy they came to arrest was already locked up in a car. The other guy, yes, someone had fled the scene, but this idea that he was going to round up a gang of people to come back and shoot it out with the police, that's the only rapidly or concerning issue, I suppose, that is raised. When O'Keefe came walking up to this officer who had already frisked him, and these two men were compliant, and yet he just, you know, the suggestion is that one would believe that he didn't ask, hey, have these guys been frisked? And the other officer didn't mention, I've already checked these guys for weapons. He just...
Could I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
About that? Actually, two questions. An observation. We see a lot of cases in which police officers make mistakes of one kind or another. Let's suppose that Wise had said, I gave him a quick frisk. Would O'Keefe be required by the U.S. Constitution to assume that Wise did a good job in that frisk? And
yeah.
I'll tell you why I've asked what I'm asking, okay? I've been reading briefs in another case where one officer frisked somebody, and a second frisk turned up a gun that the first officer hadn't found.
Okay. I think if O'Keefe... Well, first of all, Wise would have to say that the way we're taught in police training is insufficient for anyone to really be sure that there's this. There's
police officers make mistakes. Consequences of those mistakes can be life and death.
I can appreciate that, but there's also the suppression. Suppression is really a deterrent effort to keep from overstepping bounds. And I cite in the motion that Detective Wise is not new to this court. I mean, his name appears in other appeals as well. This is becoming a problem that I'm trying to communicate in Fitchburg. That if I were the chief of police in Fitchburg, I would be telling them, make sure you just keep searching these guys, get a little tighter and tighter into the pockets, and maybe we'll find something.
Well, here Wise said he conducted a brief 5-second, one-handed, waist-level pat-down.
Well, but I did ask him, did he do it according to police training? And he said yes. So if they're...
But he said he knew he didn't do a full, thorough search of the pockets because he was according to his testimony, which the district court found credible, he was distracted by the chaotic nature of the situation, and he allowed O'Keefe to finish the job or double-check.
Double-check, yes. I think that's a better characterization. And I think his testimony was, hey, it never hurts. And my response is, it does. Because these are intrusions on people's privacy. It's down by the waistline, reaching into pockets. It's degrading. And it wasn't finishing my frisk. It was letting him take another shot at it. And that's the problem, I think, that arises. And that goes into my next issue, which is I think that at some point Darius Howard had become under arrest without problem.
Well, let's go back for a minute, though. Even if the search, even if we found it unlawful under the inevitable discovery doctrine, it would have been discovered through lawful means, correct?
I don't think so.
Had that visible blood on his clothing. He would have been arrested after the officers discovered the firearm wrapped in the bloody T-shirt in the van. A search incident to the arrest would have yielded the cocaine.
Well,
you would have been arrested. It would have been discovered anyway.
Well, I mean, the first issue, and I have just a short amount of time, I just want to mention that. I know you want to get past it, but the first issue is, why are these other three people even being ordered to the ground? They know who they have probable cause to arrest. Marcus Johnson, get down on the ground. You're under arrest. Why are these other three people also being detained? They've done nothing to suggest. I mean, what if it were you three getting out of the van with him? Would the police have done the same thing? Or would you have felt comfortable? Would that have been justified? They knew. This is Marcus Johnson.
You said we three?
Well, three other people got out of the van with him. But, I mean, they can't articulate any specific facts about these three other people that gave them justification that they thought they had recently committed a crime or were dangerous. But you want to get to the inevitable discovery. I can appreciate that. And you asked about that. You know, that dovetails or relates a little bit to what I'm saying is, like, why are these people even being detained at all? Okay, well, maybe, you know, it's just safety. They were detained by Wiza. He didn't see any blood. And so I don't know that they would have inevitably been arrested or held, or I don't think they should have been detained any further after they were, okay, you're free of weapons. I have no other reason to keep you laying here on the ground. The blood was found, a small streak of blood was found on Darius's pant leg. After O'Keefe came back, and they're laying there on the ground. I mean, I have 10 minutes in front of you. If I did the whole thing on my stomach with my hands behind my back, that's a long time to be detained in that position without any articulated facts about suspicion about Darius Howard. But there he lay, frisked twice. I think it exceeded any kind of Terry stop, and it became an arrest without probable cause. I do have a little bit of time to refer to my crossover argument as it relates to the use of a crossover in the guidelines. Really, that's a question that I raise as to chronology of events, his possession of the gun.
Why does that matter? Judge Crabb seemed to say that it didn't matter, given the career offender guideline.
Well, it certainly matters if you suppress the cocaine, but for some reason he's convicted of the possession of the weapon. Then that's why I'm preserving it primarily.
That I could understand. But given the conviction for cocaine, mm-hmm. does this cross-reference matter in any way?
Since they were concurrent sentences, which I didn't know about, you know, at the time, but I suppose I'd have to concede that it will expire before he serves his time that he received as a career offender. So I can appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Rumbelow.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Mr. Jones. The district court did not err here when it held that Mr. Howard was not under arrest, that he was subject to a valid investigatory detention. The scene, as Judge Williams noted, it was very chaotic. The officers testified at the evidentiary hearing, and defendant Howard submitted their reports. When he filed his motion to suppress, Detective Wiza went to look for Mr. Johnson at this apartment complex at approximately 6:50 p.m. Lo and behold, the silver minivan pulls up. Detective Wiza alone sees two people get out of the van. It's Johnson and Carthens. He attempts to tell them to stop, and then he was caught by surprise. Two more individuals, Defendant Howard and Ari Williams, exited the van. Clearly, the detective was outnumbered. The magistrate's findings and the district court's review of the record are not at all clearly erroneous. Then you have Detective Wiza, who Judge Crabb noted, was this a model of police work? No, but he had one pair of handcuffs. Now it's him, and he described the situation. There's two individuals to his left, two individuals to his right. And one of them, I mean, Marcus Johnson not only was a suspect in the pistol whipping at Schneid's Tavern 11 days prior to that, he had also just been implicated in a shooting just days prior to May 15th, 2012. So you've got Detective Wiza trying to control a situation where the person he was looking for was just implicated in not one, but two weapons offenses. So, of course, he testified. Officer safety is his main concern. And then he's in a high-crime neighborhood, and they're not complying with his commands. And luckily, he had told Officer O'Keefe what he was going to do. And Officer O'Keefe arrived almost immediately and then was able to deal with Johnson and Carthens. But Detective Wiza, I mean, these people weren't, you know, three blocks away. This was a very tight situation. And Detective Wiza could see that Marcus Johnson was struggling. Then Carthens flees. And Judge Williams is right. I mean, he testified, look, I had my gun on Williams because I only had one set of handcuffs, so my frisk, it was so cursory. It was less than 5 seconds, and it was done with one hand of Howard. And again, by the time the second frisk happened, the scene was even more chaotic. You know, Johnson was struggling. He was finally placed in the squad car, but Carthens had fled. You know, I mean, and we know that he dumped a gun in the dumpster. So had Carthens complied and laid on the ground, the frisk of him hopefully would have resulted in finding the weapon. But the scene was very chaotic, very dangerous. The officers were rightfully concerned for their safety. And as Judge Easterbrook noted, the district court found and the magistrate judge found after hearing the testimony that Detective Wiza did not tell, or Officer O'Keefe did not know, that a first frisk had already been conducted. So there was absolutely nothing wrong with the second frisk, and because Officer O'Keefe had just found cocaine on Johnson when he felt the plastic bag, it was very reasonable for him then to touch a little bit, you know, harder under the plain field doctrine and go, oh, this is cocaine. And as Judge Williams also noted, the government did rely below and on appeal on the inevitable discovery doctrine. It's interesting that the defendant's, his argument seems to say, okay, in this crazy situation where the main guy is wanted for two gun offenses and another guy flees, that the Fitchburg Police Department was just supposed to go, oh, okay, you people leave. We're not even going to try to determine who you are when we can see blood on your clothes. I mean, they were right to be able to at least, who are you, what's your name, do a check to see if there are any warrants outstanding for their arrests. And then, of course, they would have learned through the criminal history check that Darius Howard is a convicted felon. There's the gun in the van, the blood. So the cocaine would have been inevitably discovered. And Judge Easterbrook, the only reason the argument applies to this cross-reference is if this court finds that the district court's findings were clearly erroneous and the officers weren't credible, and you reverse and say the cocaine should have been suppressed, that's the only way that this cross-reference is at all relevant. But I think that the district court was correct in denying Mr. Howard's motion to suppress evidence. So unless the court has any further questions, I ask that you affirm the judgment and conviction order. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Jones?
I only have 3 minutes, but I did just want to comment on the repeated use of this word chaotic. And perhaps people have a different opinion of that. I don't think that that's a finding of fact. That's an opinion based on analysis of the facts. And the facts are that there were two guys that had gotten out of a van that they had absolutely no...
If it's not a finding of fact, do you think it's a conclusion of law?
Well, it's an opinion.
It's not something we're going to review de novo.
Okay. Well, the argument that there's a chaotic scene going on, I think, is incorrect. And I guess use it as you may. But there were two men, no articulated facts as to why they are dangerous, suspicious, other than they got out of a van with someone who they had a warrant to arrest, and yet they lay there and were searched twice, particularly when O'Keefe came back and they had the prime suspect already locked in his car. So I have nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jones, and we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and your assistance to the court as well as your client. The case is taken under advisement.